want to make the process fun and also very smooth and manageable. So we don't want you to lose anything on your cloud. We want you to have the clear view of your assets. We want you to have the ability to manage them, and we want to work with great people and great companies.
Welcome back to How I Launched This, a SaaS story from Google Cloud. This is a podcast about the CXOs and founders of SaaS companies and some of the most innovative players in the game. This is where we bring interesting and thought-provoking technical conversations with SaaS product builders directly to your ears. And I'm Carter Morgan, developer advocate for Google Cloud. And I'm super excited today because we have Gal Zabib on, and she's an entrepreneur and former head of engineering of an AI media company. As an R&D leader, she helped build from the ground up the company's engineering team, technology, helped grow the company 10 times in revenue. And prior to all of that, she served in the Israeli Intelligence Corps as a commander of software engineering. And today we're going to be talking about Altastra, which is a software company she co-founded, which has a freemium business model based in Palo Alto, California. Altastra provides no-code tooling that enables developers and operators to build, deploy, and optimize cloud computing infrastructure. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Gal. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here, Carter.
So for all of the listeners at home, can you tell us a little bit about your background and who you are?
Well, I'm Gal. I'm Israeli. And I'm also coming from an engineering background. I'm a software engineer. Started when I was 18. So a military service is mandatory here in Israel. And I figured I want to have something that matters. So I went to this programming course. Eventually, I served for 7 years in the intelligence corps, which was very interesting, especially when you're a software engineer. After I discharged, I was actually the first engineer in a startup, which also led me to learn a lot. And 3 years later, I was managing the R&D, and this is how I got to where I am today. 3 years later, I resigned and then founded Altastra. So that was a nice practice.
Wow, that's such an interesting background. So from everything that you've done, can you tell me some of your strengths, some of the things that make you so capable of doing things at the high level you're doing them at now?
So I think that being a software engineer and also leading engineers is very helpful, especially where my product and my company today, the problem we're facing is helping engineers to accelerate software delivery. So I think that's very helpful. And this is definitely a strength. So I think if I wouldn't have like a software engineering background, it would be very difficult to be so reliable about the things that you're preaching for. So yeah, everything we're preaching for, we experienced everything. We have our own marks to move forward.
Okay. And then Altastra, is this the first company you founded?
So actually, when I discharged, I worked for an AI media company. I was the first engineer. And then 3 years later, I was leading the R&D. And 3 years after working there, I founded Altastra. It actually came from a struggle we had within engineering. This is the first and hopefully the last that is going to stick with us for many, many years.
Yeah. So what was that struggle?
So you know how when you're first building a product or building a startup company, then you just do things quick and dirty, we like to call it. Mm-hmm. So you're doing things very quickly, the things you know, whether it's how do you build your code, how you design it, you don't have much time to think about it. And usually it's also very small teams that need to go very fast. And we hit a point of scale after a year and a half working in that startup. And when you're hitting scale, then you need to do things right. So all of a sudden, things are not working as you expected. And then we try to figure out how we can scale correctly and how not having downtime and use our human resources better and working on the business and not working on the infrastructure.
Right.
And then we just try to do things. So we had like a huge Java monolith. And then we decided to break that to microservices. And then also cloud providers just announced all sort of managed services, which was really great. And then we kind of worked our way to being really distributed, being very scalable, and also reducing our costs. This is also a huge problem for a lot of young companies and also like medium size and enterprises. It took us a year, but eventually we broke the monolith. We reduced our bill. And then we figure out, okay, this process took us a year.
Right.
And that's a lot of time when you're talking engineering time.
Yeah. I'm also really, though, impressed because the company went from probably a few people working in it, 1, 2, maybe 3, to having to grow to a point where you need these processes in a year and a half. And that's pretty fast for a lot of founders. So amazing. All right. What is Altastra for everybody at home? Can you sum it up?
Altostre is a no-code infrastructure platform that actually addresses developers. So we want to give the developers the freedom to develop and not deal with infrastructure at the development stage and also afterwards. So usually what happens is that a lot of the solutions for infrastructure out there are addressed to DevOps. And in our world, in the managed services and in the cloud world, and as cloud grows, the solutions are developers need to be part of the process. And this is where you have a gap, a huge gap. And this is what Altostre is trying to overcome.
Mm-hmm. That gap of having to learn all these new tools in this space, which seems like it's always evolving, and then specializing now in areas that are outside really of development. I was a developer before I got really into Kubernetes, and it went more of the DevOps route. And it was a learning curve, I'll say that. And so is that what Altostre is trying to do, is lessen that learning curve or maybe even eliminate it?
Exactly, eliminate it. What I like to say is that an image, a picture worth 1,000 lines of code, and that's the same as if you are an infrastructure as code, and that's sometimes easier. So just imagine like a world before Wix or solutions for websites. Today, I think my mom can build a website on Wix. It's 3 clicks, right? So imagine that in an infrastructure world, in a backend world, where every developer can just be free building their own infrastructure locally, and then having kind of the same process with code when you're approving your code in a PR kind of way. The same thing about goes with infrastructure. So actually, the DevOps have a side here, and the developers have the freedom from the other end, and everyone wins.
Yeah, that sounds pretty amazing. So then how do your developers actually interact with Altostre? Is there like a GUI or some kind of domain-specific language?
Okay, so our solution is divided to three. So, well, I'm an engineer. I never left my IDE before. So our first solution is an extension for existing IDEs. So this is where developers spend their most time. And this is where we provide a visual editor right next to your code editor. So it's actually inside integrated. The third thing is that some people like terminal. So some people just like to write the commands and then just leave me alone. And that's okay. And that's part of the solution as well. Just imagine like having a GitHub application or just writing the command of push and pull and whatever you need to do. And the third thing, and this is actually addresses the DevOps or everyone who's responsible on production, on the environments and the management of this entire thing, is our web application. And in our web application, you can manage your projects, your repositories. We actually pull everything from your Git accounts and then get the benefits of rapid deployments. And you get the policies that you can enforce on your projects, on your environments, get the control and the complete view of your entire infrastructure. So that's kind of the three solutions that Altostre provides.
Yeah. And one, I'm super happy just to hear that there's a terminal option. That makes me like, I'm like, oh, yes, yes.
Yeah. Not everyone likes GUI.
Yeah. But the thing that I'm finding really interesting in this space, it's evolving so fast in the same way we look at code and how there's these practices for it. Like we check in code and there's reviews and merges. And I'm seeing a lot of that now for infrastructure with like GitOps movements, Altostre, and people that are basically saying, yo, if you're using this infrastructure, it's important how your company's running, then it should have similar procedures and processes as code, which we are more or less established at this point.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so one thing I'm interested in is you said you're a developer. And is that where you first saw this problem happening? Like, were you doing this for yourself, or was Altostre doing this for themselves? And then it was like, oh, this is a problem we can solve for everybody.
Well, after you're spending a year of trying to figure out what's the best infrastructure for your company, and you realize it takes a lot of time, you realize there is a huge gap between writing code and with your DevOps skill set, and those things takes time. And I think that time is money. Well, everyone knows that. And yeah, this is where I realized that a lot of the things that we were doing that can be automated. So why not to do that? And also, as cloud evolves, then sometimes teams are always in a struggle to keep up. And I think that you really want to have someone else keeping up for you. So the same thing as you're moving to the cloud and don't want to do on-prem because someone else can take care of that. I want to take care of my business. So if you're not an infrastructure company, then why you should?
Exactly. No, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, so here's a random question, but the name Altostre, where does that come from?
So it's actually come from the word Altostratus, which is a mid-sphere cloud. It's kind of the cloud that is covering the entire sky, and then you can't really see the sun. And this is our goal, is to be this abstraction layer on top of cloud providers and just make the cloud very accessible to everyone with the limitation. Like, you don't really need to deeply understand everything, but you're getting the out-of-the-box solution on top of your cloud providers. So it's not like we're coming to replace cloud providers. And I think also some solutions are taking this approach. We honestly don't. We want you to work with your cloud vendor, but we want to make it more accessible and easy for your entire team to work with.
I love this. And so, all right, before I ask about the name, there is a question that was basically said, a lot of people are trying to move to or adopt cloud, and it can be very difficult because it's a fast moving target. A lot of best practices are coming up all the time. My question is, what are things customers need to think about, or why do they even need a cloud adoption mindset? Is that something important, you think, going forward?
I think we can see the numbers. We can see that more and more companies put it as a target for the next years to adopt cloud. As I was saying before, I think that if you're not an infrastructure company, then you shouldn't invest a lot of your resources in building infrastructure, maintaining infrastructure. Some of the companies after 2020 are not going to even have offices. So Think about just renting space for your servers and then having also teams that need to take care of them. So I think, again, that if you're a company that can use and adopt cloud, you should. And again, we're seeing the numbers are going up. So I don't see myself as I'm leading a company today. I can't even imagine having a server somewhere sitting at my house or at the office. So I think we're going to see that more and more.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And to let specialists specialize, right?
Exactly.
So if your developers and your product people are great at making a product your customers are happy with, let them do that instead of learning the newest tool. Okay. What about when it came to Altastra? What were some of the biggest challenges? Did you have to pivot on the technology at all or anything like that?
Well, I think that we got lucky that we experienced with the technology before we even built the solution. So we actually understood the problem very deeply. And then we just went and said, okay, let's build this. But I think that the challenge thing, especially for engineers, I was saying this is my strength before, but I think that the problem is that you're all the time thinking product and engineering. And sometimes when you're founding a company, this is not the number one thing to think about. So you also need to think about business plan and pricing models and all the business side. And we didn't pivot much with the technology, but we did pivot in our business plan. So we started as the most B2B company you can ever find.
Right.
I went to San Francisco on Market Street, knocking on doors, everyone that was willing to talk to us. I just spend a lot of time there. And today, also because of COVID and 2020, but also I think that actually led us to the right place for us. So today we're a completely self-served application. Mm-hmm. We build a developer plan that is free forever for every developer to try out. And I think that that was also the problem. So developers really want to try products. So it's a debate whether you can sell before they even try, because after like the first conversations, then immediately you get, okay, let me try it. I want to try it. And then, okay, what are we going to do? We still have that on our deck and not on real life.
Right.
So this is the mindset that we kind of changed.
This has brought up so many interesting trains of thought and questions, and I'll try and get to them one at a time. But one of the first ones was the freemium versus paid product approach, where I see a lot of viewpoints that are like, you have to charge from the get-go to test the assertion that someone wants this product. And it seems like Altastra went in a different direction. Can you tell me about that thought process a little bit and why you chose to go with a freemium model?
So I think every model is right for a different kind of product, but the product that we want to be that addresses developers, I think that when you're addressing developers, you all the time have to have something that is free yet bringing a lot of value to your customers. Mm-hmm. And then also create that stickiness to your product. And then also, again, it's a win-win situation, because then when you need to grow as a business, then you can talk about the payment methods. But as a developer, we really want to bring the value to developers. And actually, our debate was whether it should be an open source or not. And we decided to go with freemium. So I think we're kind of in the middle of whether it should be like a 2 weeks trial or an open source. Let's go with a freemium and then grow from there. But, you know, everything can change. So as long as we're providing free value for developers forever, I think this is the way when you're addressing this market.
Yeah. Okay. So this actually ties back into one of the other questions that came up, this idea that everything can change. You said that being a developer, developing the product is what comes naturally. And then some of the other skills. I was reading this book. It was called The E-Myth Revisited. And I know that you like to read a lot. And so this book, they said a lot of times people start businesses and they're good at one of the three things that you need to be able to do. Like some people need to be able to vision, some people need to be able to manage, and then you also need to be able to create the product. And so it's interesting because it sounds like there's a lot of pivot points where you need all those different skills. And so, like you said, you weren't a SaaS product right away from the jump. Is that correct?
So we always aimed to be. So we aimed to work with 3 to 5 early adopters, big brand names, and then started thinking about a SaaS product self-served on the second phase. Mm-hmm. But I think we kind of reversed that. So I think the most important thing for us right now is the single developers. Again, it all comes to that. I think that at the end of the day, your users are going to also ask the right questions, ask for the right features. And it's also very dangerous when you're working with a single company, like a huge brand name, and then maybe it's not repeatable.
We see that a lot here, even at Google, where we're doing a lot at Google scale, and that's not always 100% applicable to shops of all sizes. And we have to really put a lot of effort into, ooh, what's going on there in their workplace? And that's what like our solution engineers and stuff do really well.
Yeah.
You talked about how there was a few stages to the approach, and one of it was partnerships and things like that. Can you tell me about some of Alistair's like big wins or early successes in that area?
A month ago, we partnered with Circle CI, which was very important to us.
Congrats.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you, Circle CI. Amazing product, by the way. And again, it comes from the people that we're working with. So the first thing, again, as an engineer, is that you want to make sure that the product you're working with is well integrated with your entire stack. So it's not something that you can just change everything. Okay, are you providing a CI/CD solution? Then I'm just going to use this random startup that just popped and going to move my entire stack working with it. So no, it's not going to be like that. And actually, last week, we officially partnered with GitHub. So not just identity management, which we always had because you need your Git providers for the flow in Altostra, but also made it official. So yeah, I think those are kind of nice successes.
Those are huge. Congrats. I'm super excited to hear that.
Thanks.
All right. What about the partnership with Google? How's that been treating you?
Oh, that one was one of the best partnerships we had. It's an ongoing and hopefully everlasting partnership. Mm-hmm. We actually want to partner with the major 3 cloud providers. One of the problems within cloud solutions is that they usually stick to a single provider, and we don't believe in that. Like, we believe in the ability to change and migrate, and sometimes some solutions are better than other for specific needs.
Like on-prem versus...
Like on-prem, look, Google is leading the world with big data, so the resources that are addressing that are way better than others. Mm. And sometimes you need to have multiple vendors. It's not that common, but it happens. And we also didn't want to limit ourselves. So we actually started this relationship when we were part of the Google for Startup residency program.
Oh, wow.
Started, yeah, about a year and a half ago. And we're still, I think that my weekly calls, it's at least with one of the team on Google, so it's still lasting.
Okay, that's interesting. So this Google for Starters residency, those residencies or services, are those something that you find like really useful for startups in general? Like if someone at home was listening, would you tell them, yes, go apply for these kind of things?
Definitely. That was one of the best choices we had. Actually, when we came to the program, we were like 3 people within the company. Mm-hmm. We grew the company while we were sitting there. And just imagine how much time we saved by learning from Google experts that build this huge and amazing company. So actually, all of the Google resources that you want to use are open to you and to your team. So that's amazing. For us, it's also very important because, again, I think that the key partnerships within our company is to partner with cloud providers. And Google is being one of the biggest providers in the world. It's very important. But then you realize it's also have an amazing culture. We learned a lot. Actually, we take stuff from the culture in Google to the company about all the being together and put the spotlight on the people. And I think a lot of that taught us well.
Oh, wow. Okay, this is amazing. And I love throughout this entire conversation, you've talked a lot about partnerships. And so far, we've focused a lot on external partnerships. But I wanted to ask, because you have a co-founder.
Oh, yeah.
And so what's that partnership like? How did you decide to start a company together?
You know, it's like a marriage. He's actually my better half. We actually met each other, I believe, 12 years ago. I think he's also my oldest friend. Mm-hmm. We've met each other when we were serving in the intelligence. And my dad says that I told him that if I'm ever gonna found a company, it's going to be with Evgeny, my co-founder. I don't remember that as much, but again, that's a nice tip for founders. Just speak out loud the things you want to do because someone will pick it up and it might eventually happen. So it's nice to have someone that reminds that.
Yeah.
And he's very technical. So actually, Evgeny is one of the greatest engineers I know. I think he's like the most talented software engineer I've ever worked with. The previous startup I worked for, I actually brought Evgeny to work with me. So he was working in a huge cybersecurity company that usually no one leaves. And I kind of managed to convince him. He came, he saw the problem, he experienced everything with me. So when we decided to go and found our own company, it was kind of a no-brainer. We understand this problem, we work on it together, and then now we're going to solve it for the rest of the world together.
That's really interesting. I take it you say he's your better half. So there's got to be some kind of complementary skill set. You said he's an engineer. What is it about you two that made it such a good partnership where you said, I'm going to work with this person?
I think that sometimes people are wondering whether they should go to business with a family member or a really good friend. And Evgeny and I were really good friends before that. And I think it's great when you can enter a room, have a big whiteboard discussion, or sometimes even fight about things that matter. And then when you leave the room, you can go and drink beer and forget about that and put that aside. And I think you also need to have a lot of respect for the other side. And I think that we have it. We have a good foundation. So sometimes when things, you know, are not working as we planned, we still know how to overcome that. And as long as you're not passing the line of doing things that you don't want to do, being the person that you don't want to work with, then I think that can work really, really well.
Okay. And then so something else I'm really interested in is when you were first starting the company, what kind of capital did you have to work with? Did you have to scrape it all together yourself? Did you have something to set aside? Did you eat into your own savings? That's something I'm always really interested in.
Actually, we worked for startups here in Tel Aviv as software engineers. So we got paid decently. So we kind of have our savings. Mm-hmm. And actually, about a month after we resigned, we talked to the first VC that we ever talked to in our lives. And he said yes to us, which was amazing. We came to the conversation with everyone is talking about all the no's they get before the yes. And I guess we came really prepared. And he said yes. So that was kind of amazing. So we kind of had like a small funding. It's a pre-seed round. But the great thing about that is that it led us to San Francisco. So we actually took our first investment from Upwest Labs, a VC that is taking Israeli entrepreneurs, bringing them to Silicon Valley, which was very helpful for us. Still, we haven't took salaries or anything like that. So we just used the money like just to live in San Francisco, which is very important for everyone who lived in San Francisco. So yeah, and then that was our first funding.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that because I always find it really interesting just to know.
We got lucky though. I must say that we got lucky to speak to a partner at a VC and then just get that yes. So it's not something that I'm going to count on even for the next rounds or stuff like that. I've experienced that afterwards. All the no's, but that's fine. Google, I think the number is 55, if I remember correctly, no's before getting the yes.
For a startup company or to get hired at Google?
For Google as a startup. So actually on the deck of Quest Labs, they actually have all the major companies and how many times they got the no before they got the yes.
55?
So I think for Google, it was 55. I might check that after that.
Wow. Okay. So let's go on that line a little bit because I'm curious about yourself and your values, your identity, and how that shapes Altastra. And there's got to be some kind of resilience there where you knew going into this 55 no's. You had to shore that up a little bit. How did who you are give you the grit or the perseverance or resiliency to start and run a company like this?
Wow, I hate to talk about myself. I think it's like a team effort, but definitely at the beginning, it was just me and Yev. Yev is Evgeny. Yeah, I'm rebranding his name. So just an FYI. So who are we? I think that honestly, we think that everything can be solved with technology. We really look for those challenges to make the world what it is today. And I think that we can see how much technology is affecting the world, especially living in pandemic. You much rather live in a pandemic in 2020 and not 100 years ago. So I think this is what brought us to do what we do. Mm-hmm. Also, we're very honest people. And I think you can see it also in our culture in the company. So our employees knows everything from how much we raised and who are we interviewing right now and how many customers are paying. Everything is out there. I think it's very important. Also, as a founder, when you're hiring the first person, you realize it's not just yours anymore. There are a lot of people that care about this company. And I think that being all together and making that something that important to a lot of people is also very important. So I think it's all come to an end with people. So It's all the people.
I like that. And especially that transparency and openness with people inside of your company. So what advice do you have for any founders or entrepreneurs that want to follow in your and Yevgeny's footsteps?
Just go out there. Just don't think as much. The more we think, the more we wonder. And I think like we've experienced that in the past year. So we started to write this technical blog post that we never had the courage to do before we had a product, before we had employees, before we even started to convince people that what we do is important. And I think that also you shouldn't be afraid of that. Just put your ideas and mindset out there. Everyone having different approach is okay. You can just learn from that. Mm-hmm. Making a discussion and aware discussion on Twitter or other platforms, it's okay. And yeah, just go for it. If you feel it in your guts, then just do it. Don't think too much. You're going to have a lot of people that are going to help you along the way. Just open your eyes and seek for those people.
That makes a lot of sense. I like that. All right. What about the cloud industry or specifically the space you're in? Where do you see that going in the next 3 to 5 years?
Oh, wow. I think we're experiencing a lot of change these days. So when you're talking cloud, you're talking actually, it's like saying computer science. And then some people are engineers, some people are a product, some people are doing all sorts of stuff. Same thing goes with cloud. So being in a containerized world versus being in a managed services world, a serverless world. So it's very different. I think we're going to see more and more power, or I would say management, shipping to the cloud providers. So at the end of the day, if I already took my servers, on-premise servers, and moved them to the cloud, then I also don't want to provision them, don't want to do patch management or whatever is that you need to do. So we're going to see more and more managed services. We're going to see the cloud providers taking control and less management on the software companies, which is great because then it leaves you time to, again, deal with your own business and not putting your efforts on something else. Yeah, and we're here to help with that.
That was exactly my next question, because I've seen such a rise in, like you say, managed services or even going all the way as far as no code, even for the application level.
Yeah.
And so it seems like Altaster is right in the middle of both of those. And so where do you see Altaster in 3 to 5 years? Or where are you hoping to be in 3 to 5 years?
I'm hoping to honestly just help a lot of companies that are on the cloud and also on premise, just manage their resources better. So we can talk about costs, but it's not only the cost of money-wise, but it's also the cost of human resources. And it's also like, you would go to developer today and tell him, do this infrastructure work. And he would say, oh gosh, really? Can I just solve something else? So we honestly want to eliminate it. We want to make the process fun and also very smooth and manageable. So we don't want you to lose anything on your cloud. We want you to have the clear view of your assets. We want you to have the ability to manage them. And we want to work with great people and great companies.
That's all exciting. So where can listeners at home go to learn more? Is there like a page where they can go find more resources or learn more about the company?
Of course, they can go to altaster.com. They can get started and onboarded to Altaster freely and let us know how it works. And also, I'm very open in just talking to every customer we have and every person. So they can also find me at gal@altaster.com.
gal@altaster.com. Thank you. Is there anything we missed? Anything that are like, man, I've been really wanting to talk about this, and Carter, you didn't ask, what's up?
Well, I honestly just want to say like Happy New Year, and I really hope that 2021 is going to be better to everyone, hopefully healthier for everyone. And yeah, I think we can have the second chapter of this.
I'm really looking forward to that. Happy New Year to you. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I learned so much and I just had so much fun with this conversation, Gal.
Thank you so much. I had the best time with you.
That was such a fun episode. I learned so much from all these different stories, like because we've had guests from all over the world, whether it's Israel, all over the United States, and other places. And it's always interesting to see the commonalities that founders have and the places they're different. One of the big ones that stood out to me, we talked about it a lot in the episode, but freemium versus paid model or freemium versus open source. There doesn't seem to be a consensus around the guests that we've had on which is the best model, which is the best approach. And I think Gal said it well, different models are going to work better or worse depending on your business. And so I think as a founder or an entrepreneur, it's really good to understand your market and really, really be clear about your core values and what you're trying to accomplish. So Gal said that she wants to have a really, really good product that's sticky that developers can use and get their hands on and then upgrade from there. And I can see a lot of value in that approach. Something else that I found very interesting, I've always thought in a solopreneur kind of way, where I want to do everything myself and have all the control myself. And listening to Gal talk about Yevgeny, her co-founder, and how they complement each other, right? Whether it's with skills and Yevgeny being one of the best engineers she's ever worked with, or the ability to be able to have very difficult conversations and then leave it in the office, go out for entertainment and stuff afterwards. I think that's a really interesting model. That's something I would be interested in exploring more. The other thing that really got me, and I had never heard this number before, but just the amount of no's startups get when it comes to trying to get funding or when it comes to trying to get your business off the ground. The level of resiliency that you have to have seems to be astronomical. And so that's why I thought when Gal said, just go out there and do it. Just try it. Put your ideas and your mindset out there. Go for it. Don't think too much and then learn. And I really like that approach. And that's something I'm going to try and adopt in my own life. So if you all start seeing blog posts from me, that's where this came from. This episode right here. So that's all for today. I want to say thank you again for checking out this episode of How I Launched This, a SaaS story from Google Cloud. I learned a tremendous amount from Gal at Altostra. We'll be bringing back guests from more companies, again, doing some of the most innovative work in the field. So stay tuned for our next episode. And if you want to keep up to date with the latest on SaaS, Google Cloud, or this show, subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you like this episode, be sure to give us a share on social. Thank you again. Feel free to reach out to me or to Stephanie with suggestions, comments, questions, because we'd love to keep in touch. We want to keep this conversation going. And be sure to check out the show notes for more information on Altostra. Thanks again. See you next time.